Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. My guest for this evening is Heather L. Arnold. She is an expert and researcher in the area of giants. Please welcome her to the show.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
There are people who have questioned over time, did giants really exist? And the answer to that question is yes. Heather Arnold is a graduate of Syracuse University. She had a 15-year career in the television industry in Los Angeles and Manhattan. After leaving the industry to pursue a career in pharmaceutical sales, she was given the opportunity to move from Manhattan to the Caribbean island of Aruba to start her own tour company. Through extensive investigations, field expeditions, explorations, and interviews, Heather determined that the true, rich history of the islands of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curacao had been systematically repressed and vehemently denied. Looking on old maps, Heather noticed that the island's original names were not as they are today, but were instead called the Islands of the Giants. And this Islands of the Giants, they were named after a giant race of people with elongated skulls who inhabited them. Not only were these giants part of an elite ruling class, but they were a far more advanced race than the mainland population of Native American descent. In 2018, Heather's research on giants was officially entered into the National Archives of Aruba as a contribution to the book Historica de Cantachito. Heather has officially launched her Substack, which will feature different topics regarding the Islands of the Giants. She is also the administrator of the Facebook group Stones, Bones, and the Paranormal. We had a lot to discuss this evening, very interesting stuff, so please welcome to my show this evening, Heather L. Arnold. Well, good evening, Heather, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Kelly. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited to be on.
Oh, I'm excited to have you, and very excited because you will be my one and only, to this point anyway, expert when it comes to giants. And I think that's a very fascinating topic, subject, and also Heather and I had talked a little bit before the show, just a little bit about whether there was any connection between the exposure of giants or finding giants or that to the paranormal. So we'll get into that little discussion a little bit later on. Well, Heather, so to start this all off today, usually everyone knows the drill. I go into a foundation on the guest. We evolve it to see how you are, how you came to be who you are now. And so I want you to go back. Now, this is going to be a little different for our listeners and viewers because they're used to hearing, when was the first time you had a paranormal experience? Well, in this case, if you have, great, jump in on that. Otherwise, let's ask the question this way. When was the first time you found an interest in what you're doing now?
Well, that's a great question. So I was living here in 2005, and I decided to start a tour company. And I did Harley Davidson rentals and tours and private Jeep tours. So I wanted to have historically accurate tours. And I realized it was very difficult to find the information on Aruba's ancient history. There's a lot of when the first explorers came here and the consequential wars over the land, because this land is filled with gold. And so that was easy to access, but there was nothing going back in much further than that. There was some information, but not a lot. And I began to do a lot of research and trying to figure out what was going on in Aruba, as far as back as 7,000 years ago, even further back in time. And so then I was searching on the internet. There was no books on this, the ancient history of Aruba. Anything that's been done is purely scientific. So actually, just as a precursor, all of the information I provide is from his archaeological records, reports, field reports, peer-reviewed published journal articles. So, but at the time I didn't know that. So I was looking for a book and there was no book. And so then I stumbled across an archaeologist with whom I'm now very close with here. He's the head of scientific research at the Archaeology Museum here in Aruba. And he was talking about the 500-year birthday of Aruba. And he was very angry because they were going off the 500 years based off of when Amerigo Vespucci came here, which is actually accurate. You know, Aruba's been around for maybe millions of years. So, I was listening to him. He was a video. And then he said, and there were never any giants in Aruba. Just so they're saying there were giants and there were never any giants. So I thought, what the heck? It was out of nowhere. I thought, why is this guy talking about giants? And it was at that moment that I realized there were probably giants in Aruba. And so I was researching and couldn't find any information until I started to dig into the archaeological record. And that's when you begin to see the archaeological reports of the giant bones that have been unearthed, not just here in Aruba, but on the neighboring two islands as well, Bonaire and Curaçao, which all three of them were connected prior to a series of mega tsunamis that came through the region going as far back as 3,500 BC. So that's when I began to explore the giants. And then this is kind of paranormal as part of me delving into it, because I had to figure out where to begin. I think I'm the only person doing this research. I did have a vision one night of a burial of a giant in red sand, which Aruba has, and the skull was elongated. And it turns out through my research in the archaeological record, the giants actually did have elongated skulls. So that was another component of the research, and it kind of pushed me in that direction of these giants and what they physically look like and their potential connection to other giants found globally contemporaneously. So that was the beginning of my quest for the giants.
Interesting. Couple questions to you regarding all of this. All right. I'm just going to take it piece by piece here because I've got an ultimate question. So just to inform the listeners and the viewers, so Heather, you're originally from the United States, right?
Yes, correct. Yes, okay. I lived in New York.
Okay, and then when you went to school, and I don't know if you went beyond a bachelor's degree or to a master's or even a PhD, but did you study archaeology back then?
Well, I did start to study archaeology. It was what I wanted to do, but my parents wouldn't pay for an archaeology degree. So I ended up working in the television industry. I studied at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University and had a job before I graduated within the television industry. And I worked in that industry for many years. And so, but my minor, which actually became a dual major, was in feminism with a concentration in South Asian religions. So how feminism would manifest itself in Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, And it was, there was a lot of archaeology and anthropology that was layered within that minor. So I was able to get away with that one by my parents. But my heart was always in archaeology. So once I left the pharmaceutical industry, which was the industry I was in after my television career, I then decided to start the tour company because I love travel. And it was from there that I was able to accidentally pursue archaeology and anthropology through this, you know, through my work.
Okay, interesting. And then so you selected Aruba as a place where you wanted to initially, what, start out your tour, doing your tour work? Is that kind of how it all began and how you ended up over in Aruba?
Yes, I actually ended up, was rock climbing, and I broke my back in two places. So I couldn't do my job anymore. I was living in Manhattan and I could not do my job anymore. It was impossible. So I had to come up with a plan B and I had to recover, and the recovery took over a year. So I said, oh, let me just go to Aruba. And my intention was never to live here. My intention was just to recuperate, relax. I was, you know, laid out on a couch for the better part of a year and a half. So then I began to, you know, I was going crazy because I wasn't doing anything. It was making me nuts. So I began to come up with a business plan, because when I was here in Aruba, I saw many opportunities for businesses. And so that business plan that I created when I was laid up was a business plan for a private tour company. And that's kind of, then I ended up staying here and meeting my daughter's father. We've since separated, but at the time, you know, I was establishing roots. And so that's why I ended up staying in Aruba.
Interesting. Okay. So Giants has fascinated not just myself, but many, many people. I had recently listened to someone give a talk at a conference who talked about Giants, but there was one puzzling question that really struck me regarding Giants in general. And the question I had come up with in listening to the presentation from this person was the claim that when people are unearthing giants, they disintegrate. And because people have always asked the question, well, if there were giants that existed, then why don't we have like a museum where there's an actual full-size giant that people can come to look at? And the answer was, because they disintegrate and they're impossible to remove from where they're discovered. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's the same case as happened here. There were archaeologists who tried to exhume giant skeletal remains at one of the largest Caribbean archaic cemeteries. It's called the Malamuk Cemetery. It's just a couple of miles from where I am right now. And so it was very difficult to unearth these bones because of their great antiquity, the climate, et cetera. However, in Bonaire, there is a private collection, and in the private collection is a giant skeleton. I have seen it with my eyes. I'm planning on going back to Bonaire to see it again. And it is, the description is that it is one of the giants. It's very strange. They have it dated to maybe I think about 500 years old, but that is just a guess. I think it's much older. I think they dated it then because it didn't disintegrate. It was one of the ones that didn't, but it could just be the way it was preserved within the soil. Mm-hmm. However, when Chris Angles, who was an archaeologist, he was actually a Renaissance man of sorts, a Dutch man living in Curaçao in the 1970s. He was fascinated with the giants. He knew there were giant remains, and he tried to unearth two skeletons here in Aruba. And what happened, the same thing, they disintegrated. However, he was able to get two skulls extracted from the ground. And those two skulls were on display at the Curaçao Museum. It was even written about by a journalist in 1980 in the Reading Eagle, which is still in publication out of Pennsylvania, about these giant skulls that were on display. And the description was these were of the giants, and they were very large skulls. One actually has a hand fused to its face, a large hand. When I began my research, I tried to track down the skulls. The museum had recently been renovated and the skulls disappeared. Oh. And so that's a common theme. Now, the bone marrow skeleton I have not seen since 2019. The museum, the private collection, has changed hands. So one of the goals, once I settle in here in Aruba, which I'm still kind of in the transition of moving, which is more complicated than you would think, the first trip I plan to do is to Bonaire because I want to check on the skeleton. So I'm hopeful it was a male. They said they thought it was a male. And that's kind of what's weird about this. They think it's a male. They think it was this big. They don't. So there's a they think it was this old. It's a very inaccurate or more theorized science, if you could even call it that. However, I want to check on the status of that skeleton because that's the most concerning. I mean, that is the proof. As a matter of fact, in the 1980s, an entire archaeological report was done on the bone marrow skeleton. It's actually called the bone marrow skeleton. And because it was a full skeleton, the only one ever unearthed on all three islands that was intact. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion of the investigators at the end of that scientific report was that there definitely were giants on the islands, and the skeleton proved that to be the case.
So people are wondering, on average, I guess, what would a person consider to be the height of a giant? What is there any kind of a, now we know that, you know, our basketball players here and wherever, sometimes even due to environmental which is what I think could make some sense or whatever, are relatively tall. I mean, I've seen some 7 foot, whatever, men here, very, very tall, just absolutely makes you feel so small. But what's considered to be the height of some of these giants, especially the one you talk about in Bonaire, right?
Right. So the conclusion of the archaeologist in the bone marrow skeleton archaeological report was that that skeleton was over 8 feet tall. But what's so that doesn't seem like it's so tall, but that was, of course, a mathematical equation. That's how height is determined in skeletal bones. The archaeologist even mentioned that there was probably shrinkage of the bones, which does occur, so that the skeleton could have even been taller than 8 feet. But what's interesting to note about these skeletons is that it wasn't just their height, but it was also their width. Their bones are thicker. Right. So these were massive people, not just in their height, but in their width as well, in their muscles. And also the skeletons, the giants of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao had elongated skulls. Mm-hmm. And the elongation of the skull also added to the magnitude of size of these people. Their skulls, instead of going in a cone shape, went up and back. So a large part of the brain case was elongated towards the back. And so anatomically, they are different. There, where their neck attaches to the skull is different to accommodate the weight of the brain and the brain case. Their eye sockets are different. They have much bigger eyes. Where their ears were is in a different place. So these were, they were human, but they were very different from modern humans of today. Now, when Vespucci first came across the giants, in which he writes in great detail about them in his letters of his time here in Aruba, where he was one of the first non-giants to come here, that is documented. And he writes about that the giants, if he was standing and the giants were kneeling, they would still be taller than him. Huh. So he was the first one to actually call the islands of the giants, which was the original name of Aruba and Curaçao, and Bonaire eventually. And then Curaçao actually kept that name of the islands of the giants for quite some time until the names were changed. But on the first map of the New World, you will see that was done in 1502 AD, you will see the Aruba and Curaçao, and they're named the islands of the giants. So the giants probably were minimum of 8 feet tall, and we're assuming they were even taller than that.
So were they just, I don't want to say localized, but just to those islands right there, or is that just the only known at this time or throughout history here where there was such a concentration of them there? Or were they other places, but people hadn't really discovered that yet? What's your thoughts?
Well, the giants here seem to have come from nowhere. There's no idea where they came from. The islands of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao were not attached to mainland South America, which is just 16 miles away from where I am. So they don't know where they actually came from. They don't believe it's from South America. Now, however, there were two breakaway civilizations of these giants who are inhabiting these islands. One was in Colombia and one was in Cuba. In the caves of Cuba, there were remains that looked identical to the ones that found here in the Caribbean, as well as the burial practices were the same. And another curious piece of the puzzle was that after the body had become skeletal, the body was exhumed and the skulls were painted in a red ochre from locally sourced manganese. And also the burials were in two forms, either in the form of isosceles triangles or in the forms of a central person in the middle and then others coming out like spokes in a wheel. So those two connections of the burials and the skeletal remains were the archaeologists were able to determine that the giants did, at least these giants here did try to start other civilizations elsewhere, but they eventually ended as well. Whether there's a connection between the giants found here and giants found globally, because essentially there have been giants found almost everywhere. I think now I just read something that they're even in, they found some evidence in Antarctica. Well, I haven't been able to confirm that. That maybe there's a connection between all of them eventually, and then being scattered about the world, that the divides grew in terms of their culture, their societies and rituals, etc. But I know in terms of the petroglyphs you'll see here in Aruba, you will find also in other places around the globe, the spirals, the cup and rings, the cupules, these slashes on the walls or dots, very similar, nearly identical patterns and designs that you will find globally. So there definitely was a connection. So the giants, though, found here in the Caribbean, I have not heard of any other giant remains found in the Caribbean. There was someone who asked me about something that they might have found in the Dominican Republic, but I have never found any archaeological records to back that up. So I believe this area of the Caribbean was the only location for giants.
Interesting. Did you say that from, I don't want to say from speculation, or how can one tell whether a giant is a male or a female or even a teen or something along that lines? Have they found any female, what they would consider to be female giants as well? And how tall, since women seem to be a little bit, not everybody, of course, shorter than most men, was it the same for male, female giants? What are your thoughts on that?
So it's interesting because the archaeological reports have the archaeologists disputing one another. So the first skeletal remains that were unearthed were actually in a cave in Hato, Curaçao. And the first archaeologist who studied them firsthand said it was a female. And then another archaeologist came by in another archaeological report that was talking about this the skeletal remains and said it was a male. So in this cave system here in Aruba called Canachito, there were skeletal remains, with the central one being the most prominent in this burial. That's one of the spokes in the wheel burials that you'll find. And the archaeologists automatically thought it was a male because of the patriarchal belief system that maybe they were coming from. But now then, consequently, other archaeologists said, no, they thought it was a female. So there's really a confusion of that. Now, this was definitely, they were a matriarchal society, and you find clues of it in their megaliths. You find clues of it in the burial chamber that I rediscovered. And you will also find it in, again, the Malmuth Cemetery, which was dated to 5,000 years. Just a couple of years ago, it was pushed back to 7,000. I think it's even older. And of all the burials that are in isosceles triangles, there's only one central burial in the center of the cemetery that is alone and has the most elaborate burial. Mm. And it's a special platform was made, a turtle shell was placed under and above. The grave gifts were the most ornate. And that was a female, and she was determined to be a female. And that has never changed. She also had a hump back, which is quite interesting. So her height could have been even taller, except she began to suffer from, scoliosis and a humped back. Yeah. But she was also the oldest person in that they could determine. So she was in her late 40s. Mm-hmm. And because she was prominent, alone, and in the center, that was the conclusion that she was probably one of the leaders. So she was definitely the head of all of them at some point, probably all of the giants, and she was definitely a female. Now, Vespucci talks about when he first arrived on the island of Aruba, he came across women and teenage girls, and he couldn't believe the size of even teenagers. The teenagers were towering over them. He estimated them to be about 15, 16 years old. He actually was even going to try to kidnap them to bring them back to Europe, except his plans were thwarted when 36 men arrived back with these giant weapons he had never seen and didn't even think he could pick up. And he said he couldn't believe that they were even taller than the women. So clearly the men were probably taller, but the women and the children were also tall. So they were all tall, but the men were probably the tallest out of all of them.
Interesting. Now, in the introduction, the video introduction, which everyone has seen at this point at the start of this show, Heather is had demonstrated the many places that she had gone to do some of her work. One of the most fascinating, and it seems like it's in, I don't know if it's in the news or it's just someone is really interested in it lately. The thing about the Easter Island, stone statues, and how they're like, look, see, their full body is even under this dirt. So it's not like just their heads and whatever half of their body is sticking up out of whatever. They actually are a full bodied type of a stone. Tell us a little bit about what you know, because I think you were on Easter Island. What do you know about those? What do you know about all that?
Yeah, so I did get to go to Easter Island in April of 2018, and I spent a week there and went on private tours and viewings with an archaeologist. So it was quite interesting, but he was also a native Rapa Nuian. He was from Easter Island. His parents had been instrumental in raising up, they were also archaeologists, raising up a series of Moai that had been toppled during a tsunami. There's a lot of tsunami activity on the island. And so they had to actually invent machinery in Japan that didn't exist, ship it over in pieces in a container, put it together on the island, and weren't even sure if it was going to work because that was the only way they could figure out how to raise the Moai. That's how heavy they were. and then to place them on the top of an ahu, which is a platform, which is also tall, and place them perfectly and have them not topple and have them looking all the same direction. And then they would put the top knot on top, which made them even taller, which was made from this red stone of a volcanic stone. And then they had to place that on top. To this day, you know, no one really knows how it was done. It was also shown recently that there were no trees on Easter Island. When you go to Easter Island, there is vegetation, but nothing like massive amounts of forests or anything of that nature. There are no forests there. And so it was determined that Easter Island never probably did have forests. And if they did, they wouldn't even have enough logs to roll the moai. And how it doesn't still doesn't explain how they were lifted up to the ahu. And when you see the magnitude of the size of them, I mean, you see the pictures, but to be there and see them, my first vision of them was after I had arrived on Easter Island. I woke up the next day early in the morning before the sunrise and went to see the sunrise at the moai. And so it was pitch black. I couldn't see anything. And as the sun's coming up to see these, it's almost, you get scared. I mean, you think, oh my gosh, these things are huge. You can't believe the size. And so I was just baffled, you know, and he's an archaeologist and I'm traveling with him. And, you know, his parents are the experts on the moai. And I asked him, well, how do you think they got on these platforms? And he said, they walked. So because he was an archaeologist, he still was also a Rapa Nuian native to the island, and he was able to gel his scientific research with his culture. And for him, it was quite simple. No, they walked. They didn't have to be lifted. They walked. And he said there were giants that originally were erecting them, and then they made the moai, and then the moai they put this power into them that they would scoop out of other stones, and when they would put the eyes on the moai, which were made from coral. Mm-hmm. And when they placed those eyes, then the moai could see, and then once the moai could see, then they could walk to the platform. Huh. So it's really amazing. And to have an archaeologist tell you that with a straight face and all, you know, and not even questioning it. I mean, and then he would tell me the story. Look, my parents, who were also Rapa Nuian, who were now archaeological professors in the university in Chile, in Santiago, he was saying, yeah, no, we all know that they walk. There's no other way. My parents had to have someone in Japan invent a machine to lift the moai that never existed before, and we weren't even sure it was going to work. So he said, no, there's no way they could have done it except if they walked. And so when you see where the quarry is and you see where they place these moai, which is all over the island, I mean, literally all over, and how they had them standing on these platforms of also mega, mega stones, which is the oldest platforms and the oldest moai, which were made of basalt, are clearly of a different architecture than the later ones. And you can see that. And you can see one of the platforms looks like the stone was melted together. It's you can't even get a piece of paper through them. The creases in the stonework, that you begin to realize, wow, this was an older civilization, and it was a civilization that not only could carve this stone, could extract it from the earth. As a matter of fact, where the basalt is found that made the oldest moai on the island, it's now covered over in water. You can't even access it. And allegedly during that time, there were only certain time periods of the year where the water would recede enough where they could extract the basalt. And it was just such a massive undertaking. And you don't really know why did it happen. They say that the moai were revered and they are our ancestors. And that could be the case. Or it could be even more complex. But certainly you begin to understand that there were probably a race of people that were not of our stature, potentially and probably giants, who were creating these structures, these people they essentially thought they were alive at one time, and placing them on these platforms. It's just incredible. And that the people of Rapa Nui fully believe that they walked onto those platforms, and at one point they were alive. So it's very interesting. And you know, if anyone can go to Easter Island, I encourage them to do so. It's a long trip, but it was, you know, the memories will last a lifetime. And to see the Moai in person is just, is no words to describe it, really. It's beyond comprehension.
And Heather, are these, you know, in seeing some of the pictures that people have been posting regarding, you know, bearing down beneath the earth, and then see they've got a full body kind of thing, and was it the tsunamis and stuff like that that kept washing up all this dirt, and so it just went up to their bellies or whatever after a long period of time, and now people are trying to unearth, or at least they're trying to, one at least I know of, maybe there's more. Would a regular giant, the size of what we talked about before, be able to even carry something like that, or were these even more ginormous than a giant was?
Well, if you had a couple of giants together, you probably could do it. I mean, these are megatons. I mean, you look, I mean, even here in Aruba, there are megalithic sites or a dolmen, there are balanced rocks. So clearly they were, these megaton boulders, maybe even 100-ton boulders, were lifted and placed on other stones and then pushed into a certain directionality to indicate something else, or to garner some sort of energetic field, who knows? So you have to think, okay, maybe if it was a bunch of giants, they could actually lift it. Because remember, they were also had enormous muscles, very strong bones. So they could have done that. Or maybe there was some sort of technology that we have lost, that was they were able to almost levitate the stones, for example. That could be a possibility. I've been to Coral Castle in Homestead, Florida, in the U.S., where it's said that that is what was done there. The stones were actually levitated and put, there was a zero gravity set up underneath the stones, and they were able to essentially float into the places they were. Mm-hmm. The way they are now. So that could be the case. They could have, you know, either any is possible, either is possible, because with, when you have these giant people, you know, I don't know how much they could have lifted, but they were so strong. That, as a matter of fact, when the archaeologists here in Aruba tried to extract or look at the bones of the giants, they used a simple modern human cadaver saw that kept breaking. So the archaeologists had to invent a new saw that could get through the bones of the giants. Oh, so that's how much more thicker, much more thick and just hard that they were. As a matter of fact, most of the skeletal remains, I've never heard of any of these giants having broken bones. Now, some of them might, like this, the old woman, she had a humpback. Right. And then, of course, usually when you see giant burials, there's always little people. And here in Aruba, that's no exception. There was a little person found here buried. And this, what we would consider some sort of genetic anomaly, maybe even a disability, was not looked at the same way by the giants. So this little person had an elite burial. They didn't, you know, have anything broken or anything that physically wrong with them that caused them to die. It seems that they actually were almost revered and given a very special life because of the way they were born. So this woman having the hunchback, that could have added to her prominence within the community.
Wow. That's it's absolutely fascinating. I'm just trying to imagine. I just sit here, I'm kind of a visionary. So as you're talking, I just was sitting here just kind of seeing a moving picture in front of me. So I often look like I'm, you know, spaced out, but I'm not. I'm really actually into the scenario or to the scene you're talking about. You know, I can't even begin to imagine. But the other thing that I was wondering is, if there's so many giants, did they ever, or has anyone ever come up with a number about how many would be on, like you say, on that are buried within Aruba or anywhere, because, you know, they take up space. You know, think about our burials here, you know, how many coffins they can get lined up in a cemetery. Well, I highly doubt, although you might have to correct me on this, I highly doubt they were making coffins for people back then. What did they do? Just bury them as they were when they died? I mean, what do you know about all of that, Heather?
So there weren't, you're right, there weren't a lot of giants. They were the elite ruling class. They were definitely in charge. Mm-hmm. They had access to cave systems here in Aruba, for example, that are nearly inaccessible, very well hidden. As a matter of fact, I live very close by four of the caves that they lived in. They lived in, they worshipped in, and they buried in, and they gave birth within. And you nearly die getting to those caves and coming down from those caves. It's just such a dangerous endeavor, but and to think that the giants were doing this. And so so some of the burials of the giants were in caves, mostly inaccessible, very high up caves that you have to literally scale a wall to get to. And then the Malmuk Cemetery has, that were identified, at least 72 burials. But there are more. They just left them in the ground because eventually what was happening was the bones were disintegrating anyway. So there really wasn't a need to keep digging and looking. And so what they would do is they would place the body in the fetal position with its hand to the head. And some of them, depending on the status of the individual, they would do a very ornate burial using maybe a stone as a base in the ground and then place the body on that stone and then place a turtle shell on top of it and then cover the gravesite and then on top put another rock formation, whether it be a circle or a pyramid shaped with the stones. And then some, usually grave gifts within the grave and then outside the grave. So a lot of shells, different shells that were now extinct would sometimes go on the top. So that the intricacy of the burial really determined the status of the individual. So with the idea of burying people in the shape of an isosceles triangle, generally speaking, at the angles of the isosceles triangle were the giant burials. And then the lines that make up the triangle were generally average statured people. So the giants were holding prominence even within these geometric shapes. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think there were a lot. Now in the birthing chamber, there's a pictograph of a woman and she has a baby inside of her. And then next to her are slashes on the wall of this okra, this red okra that's probably from this locally sourced manganese. And so there weren't a lot of slashes. So if the slashes were designating births, there weren't a lot of births. And so I don't think there were a lot of giants that were being birthed. And another interesting burial ritual was that after the body had become skeletal, the body was exhumed, and particularly the skull where the elongation occurs was painted with this red ochre manganese. So, and then reburied again. So what purpose that serves, I have no idea. It's very baffling. And so the giants were given these very complicated ritual burials in specific geometric patterns. And the average stature people weren't. There was also another cemetery that was found where the bodies were kind of just strewn and not very organized, which you're assuming those weren't, they weren't giants and they weren't, and had any sort of level of prominence within the society. Mm-hmm. So because there were fewer giants, they didn't need a lot of burial space. Mm-hmm. And they didn't bury, sometimes they bury two people together, particularly there's one cave where they found what appears to be a mother and a teenage daughter. So sometimes they would do things like this. But because there weren't a lot of giants, there weren't a lot of the burials. So although they were the ruling class, probably just based off their size and maybe even the fact that they were more advanced in terms of their thinking, maybe even technology, who knows, they were the ones in charge. But the others were just buried normally. And it wasn't a large population of people living here, not like we have today.
So for when you find a burial or something that's buried like that, even though you may not be able to disturb it, I presume we're talking what's left is nothing more than its skeleton. The next question someone would be asking is, well, what did they eat? And sometimes when you find or come across some of these mummified bodies of whomever that people are discovering all over the planet, they can somehow get into, if they're mummified well enough, they can figure out what their last meal was or what was in their stomach. But with giants, have you ever come across anything that has been mummified, or has it all been pretty much skeletal?
Yes, all the remains, sadly, are skeletal. It could be the climate, too, because the climate is so harsh. We're in a semi-arid region, and it's essentially desert islands. Yeah. So there was nothing, no flesh, no hair, nothing is really retained, no clothing, if there was any. Now, here in Aruba, there are shell mounds. Now, the archaeologists are saying that there were dumps of shells, but these shell mounds are enormous, and they're not just on the coast. They are also inland. And as a matter of fact, there is one that's inland next to the burial site where all of the giants, well, not all, but a large portion were buried. Mm-hmm. And they have a distinct shape. So they're flat on the top and then they come down. This is a very common, even in the United States, a mound structure, something that you will see with this flat top and then going down the sides. And it's, you know, obviously three-dimensional. And it's made up of all these shells. So where the giants were probably eating is on the coast. This one particular area was just discovered scientifically, but however, I think the giants knew this 7,000 years ago, that it's an area where new species of shells are constantly being birthed. Hmm. So, for example, last year, I think it was, there were 9 new species of shells never found, shell creatures within these shells never discovered before anywhere else on the globe. So the giants must have known this, so they had an easy source of not only food, so shellfish definitely probably was one of them, but they were also then placing the shells in a very distinct pattern in these shell mounds, which archaeologists have called middens, and basically said they were garbage dumps. And so there's no studying being done. As a matter of fact, 2 mounds were destroyed recently due to construction because no one's even paying attention. And these shells are also extinct. And you could see where they would put a hole and definitely extract whatever the creature was. But then they were placing these mounds and making very, very tight, strong, well-sustained mounds and of a certain shape and structure. So when the skeletal remains of the giants are unearthed and they are looked at by the archaeologists, they're also noticing that the teeth are ground down almost to the bone. So I don't know if they were using their teeth as tools. Maybe using the teeth to extract the creatures out of the shells, or maybe there were other things going on. Now, there was an ancient piece of corn found within one of the caves. So it is believed that there was some sort of agriculture going on. Also, there is, by another part of the coastline, I discovered a debris field of where they were making tools. And you can see where some of them were discarded because they broke or maybe wasn't big. And these are giant tools. And it's very close to the coast. So some of them are quite sharp. As a matter of fact, there's obsidian found here. And so a lot of the obsidian in particular was quite sharp. So it's believed they were also getting fish. So they were using the particularly the obsidian to cut and get at the meat of the fish. Beyond that, they probably were eating turtles as well. On the cave walls, you'll see petroglyphs of if they are to be thought of as actual creatures. At one time, there was a seal that's drawn on the cave that's now extinct. It was called the Caribbean seal, and it was just overfished and has now gone. Mm-hmm. That could have been another source. We have whales here. We have whale sharks. So there's a place here called Shark Hill where there's thousands, if not a million, teeth of sharks, some of them very, very, very large. So they could have, that could have been a fishing ground or where they were getting the sharks and then disposing of the bodies in this one area of the hill. So we assume it was heavy on seafood, but there was also definitely vegetation involved. Now, Vespucci does talk about how they had all these trees and how they had, they appeared to have vegetation as part of their diet. Mm-hmm. So, we can think that maybe at that time there were other trees, et cetera, in existence that aren't here anymore that they were able to also take food from too.
Interesting. Wow. Really fascinating. I do have one more question before we go into our wrap up, because I know you and I have talked a little bit about this before the show. As it relates to the paranormal, you know, it's really interesting about all this is that I don't think anyone has ever really reported that I saw the ghost of a giant person. I mean, and so tell us a little bit about the maybe the hauntedness of Aruba, or even the story you shared with me about being in that cave and that blue light going over your daughter. Tell us a little bit about all of that.
Yes, so that's in the birthing chamber. I took my daughter up there because she had not seen it, and she's a Reuben. We went to that cave. So it's a series. It's a huge limestone monolith, and within the top of it, it's about 500 feet high. Are four caves. One was used for habitation. One was used for ritual because it's all petroglyphs. One was used for burial, and one was used, I believe, for birthing. And it was in that cave where I was taking photos of some of the cupules that are there, as well as some of the drawings on the wall. My daughter decided to sit down on a rock in the center of the cave, and I took a photo of her. Mm-hmm. It was after I got home and looked at the pictures that I saw that there was a light with no light source whatsoever. It was kind of a bluish light shining down on my daughter. If you even magnify it, you could see all sorts of strange things in the light, as well as orbs. And it was just shining in a diagonal coming from the inside of the cave and onto my daughter. So that was really a strange phenomenon. And many people mentioned it. I posted it and didn't say anything. And everyone, including photographers, were saying, well, what is that light? What is that blue streak on her? Of course, there are presumed to be portals here in Aruba. The portals are allegedly drawn in petroglyph panels, and some of them allow for things to enter and some of them allow for things to exit. Mm-hmm. And I had an archaeologist here in Aruba tell me about a place that of rock formations where there are also drawings, that there were portals there. I believe he said about eight. And some of them would take you to other parts of the island. Some of them would take you off the island completely. And one time I was staying in a house by that area, and I was around the solstice and the summer solstice. I was having all these nightmares, and I told him about it. And he said, well, that's because you're staying here and there's eight portals and all these things are coming in and out of the portals because they're activated because it's the solstice. And this is an archaeologist, by the way. So I thought, oh my gosh. And then from there on, I started to do more research on the portals. And you can see where certain other places of drawings also have these spirals. And one can assume that you would enter in one place and then end up in this other part of the island where there's also spirals. Another interesting thing is Aruba is one of the few islands in the Caribbean that has the most petroglyphs of anywhere else in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And there's pictographs as well and petroglyphs, and they're scattered all throughout the island. So it's quite intriguing. Where I live is supposedly haunted, and people will hear screams at night and wailing and crying. My daughter and I are anxiously awaiting that. My daughter probably more than me, but we have not heard anything so far yet.
Ah, oh, be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
That's the theme of my show, by the way. So it's like, and when it happens, Heather, you probably won't ever be able to turn it off. So, you know, this has been very fascinating, and especially with the connection, or some connection to at least Aruba with the hauntings and stuff there. That's interesting. And then the giant aspect, I don't know if they had a soul that remained, stayed around, lived on. Maybe they never even thought about it. Who knows? But the portal aspect is also interesting, because one would wonder if these giants went in and out of these portals. I don't know if that's even a question that can be answered. Until you're standing there, or until you've had your own experience going in and out of a portal, I don't know if I would want to test the water on that. So very interesting. So tell us a little bit, because this is very fascinating, and I know you do a lot of work on it. So tell us a little bit about how people can look you up, look up your sources, and see the work that you've done. And then I'll make sure I get all this on the show notes at the end of the show.
Great. Thank you. Yes. So I am on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Heather L. Arnold. My Instagram is Heather_L_Arnold. That's the only one that's different. All the rest are Heather L. Arnold. I also am the administrator of a Facebook group called Stones, Bones, and the Paranormal, where I try to share a lot of things from independent researchers as well as paranormal experiences. I think there's a large connection, particularly between megalith sites and the paranormal. And Aruba has a lot of megalithic sites here. Also, I'm launching April 1st, which by this time that it's that people will be watching us, it will already have been launched. A Substack at heatherlarnold.substack.com. It's free to sign up. It's free to read. Just enter in your email and you'll receive a notification every time I publish. And I will be publishing excerpts of my book, because I think it's easier for people to read smaller excerpts, almost in a blog form with lots of pictures, than to consume a whole book. And I'm hoping that that will help me get my information out to a wider audience.
Yeah. And yes, and she brought up one very good point here. For those of you hearing the show right now, this has aired and will be aired on a podcast much earlier, in which you would have to wait till April 1st, but we're just around the corner on that. But when it comes to the TV version, which is this, the taping we're doing right now, that will be in August, at the end of August. And very interesting stuff here, Heather. So, well, we'll have to have you back after you go digging around out there a little bit more and see what's over in, what did you call it, Bonaire?
Bonaire, yes.
Bonaire. Yes. Yeah, yes. That might be a good, interesting, boy, talk about a subject that not every day a person can literally just go out their back door and go, yeah, I think I'm just going to go down to the museum today to see a giant. You have to almost do a little bit of work here to go and see one, but absolutely fascinating. Well, Heather, thank you so much for all the information. And again, everybody, look at the show notes at the end of the show. You can easily find her through all those sources there. Thank you, Heather, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for having me. I look forward to coming on again.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Subscribe to this program by clicking on the link on her podcast page to follow upcoming episodes. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time, be careful what you wish for. The script, vocal talents, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.